Welcome to the Access Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my good friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. This time we'll be talking about the transits and ingresses from October 5th to the 18th of 2014, and our Astrology 360 topic for the day is astrologer Andrew Morton, who is joining us from the UK.
Yes, indeed.
We're very excited to have him with us. And first, we're going to be talking about the planetary movements of the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
So, what have we got going on? We're starting out just the day after Mercury has gone retrograde. So that's worth mentioning.
Mercury will be retrograde for this whole fortnight we're talking about.
Yeah. It starts on the 4th of October.
Okay.
And then on the 7th, we've got the Sun opposite Uranus. So that is going to be sort of a restless and impatient sort of energy. Maybe some outbursts and ego clashes, or possibly disruptions in your daily trying to get things done sort of activities. Then the next day, on the 8th, we've got Venus square Pluto.
Okay.
Which is a rough one also. It's a bit of a power struggle sort of dynamic.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. And, expect some difficulty maybe in relationships or with finances, some manipulation and crossed wires possibly in that sort of area. And on the same day, we've got Mars trine Jupiter, which is actually quite a great one.
Quite a good one, isn't that? That one's quite good, I think.
Yeah, it's very positive, very sort of energetic. It's a good one for exploring your potential and balancing ambition with long-range thinking. It's a really good business aspect, I think, and just good generally for getting anything done that you want to see sort of lasting effects from.
Good.
I think. And then on the 10th, we've got Mercury moving into Libra.
Mercury into Libra.
Yes. And that is good for negotiations, for
discussions, ideas. Yes. Talking to your romantic partner, I would assume.
Yeah, definitely. Hashing things out peaceably is a good thing for that. And also on the 10th, we've got Venus in opposition to Uranus, which is that's another difficult one for Venus. let's see. Yeah, it's sort of the not what you signed up for, startling shocks and revelations maybe happening in relationships or with finances, maybe paying more than you expected all of a sudden.
So Venus is in position there opposing Uranus, squaring Pluto, so it's creating a T-square.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. That's okay. It's Venus is going up against
the big boys.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole cardinal thing.
Yeah.
The ongoing cardinal thing that's been happening. So Venus is joining into that. And then also we've got a bit of a lull until the 16th, and then we'll have the Sun conjunct Mercury, which is, of course, happens all the time.
Right.
Mercury is very, very close to the Sun. So it'll be easy to communicate your point, make people see things your way, and et cetera. That's in Libra.
In Libra.
So that'll be good for negotiations and stuff, et cetera, as well. And then on the very next day, we've got Mercury conjunct Venus, so...
It's all coming together, isn't it, on the 16th, 17th there.
So, with those kind of, all that pile up in Libra, peace might break out somewhere, I think. Maybe.
Do you think?
Maybe.
Or maybe they'll just be talking about peace.
Yeah. Oh, talking
Not
about
like they haven't ever done that before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So that's what's happening.
That's quite a thing, yes.
Yeah. And we've also got... Well, one exciting thing anyway happening with the moon this week.
We do. We actually, I'm going to say that we do have a full moon on October the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not just any old full moon. This is an eclipse. And we're going to discuss that a little bit further in our next segment.
Excellent. So that's the transits for October 5th through 18th.
Arwen. And if we talk about some of the moon phases, the one that springs to mind immediately for our period is the full moon on October 8th. But this depends on where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's not just any old full moon. It's a very special moon.
It's a little.
At this stage, I'd like to introduce our guest, Andrew Morton. Andrew, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm having a great time already. listening to you ladies.
Thank you.
So let's just have a quick look at this eclipse that's coming up.
Yes, the blood moon.
Yeah.
The blood moon.
The blood moon, so called.
So tell us why it's called that.
Well, it's called a blood moon because it's a total eclipse of a moon, which could only happen at full moon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally a full moon is fully illuminated by the sun and will reflect back sunlight, the fullest of sunlight on that moon. So the moon is fully illuminated in that particular sign, the sign opposite the sun. And for those of you who ever do it, which I occasionally do, is if you stand in the light of a full moon around that night that's maybe just before, if not exact, then you can get the feeling of whatever that moon is trying to impart, which is kind of the message from the sun. It's this little communion of the two. One is reflecting back the opposite, in theory, and they talk, they communicate. The moon is the communicator. You don't always hear the sun's message, you see, directly, because you can't look directly at it. But the moon gives it back to you, and she will impart something. So full moons are always very interesting, even if they don't necessarily specifically closely aspect anything in your chart. But if they do, then what is the message about that planet, or that position, or that house, or that sign in your own chart? Now, the thing about an eclipsed full moon is, actually, the moon does not have that facility anymore, because it is no longer able to reflect back sunlight, because it goes into what would be called the shadow of the Earth. Because in order to have a full moon, the sun and the moon must be opposite. And therefore, for the moon to be opposite the sun at a full moon, it must be on the other side of the Earth, away from the sun, in order to make that reflection, which is why you get this polarity thing of full moons, these polar opposites. And the Earth, therefore, is between the two. Well, most of the time, because of the orbit of the moon, which is inclined at a different angle to that of the Earth around the sun, that is clear of the Earth and therefore is able to do that. It's like a sit up, or it'll sit down, if you like. In our sky, it will look like a sit up. So there's no block, but it will still be the other side of the Earth. Well, on an eclipse, these three things, Earth, Sun and Moon, all line up. So in order for them all to exactly line up, the Moon, therefore, will be hidden from the Sun. And in theory then, at a full moon, it should be a little bit like a solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse where the sun goes dark. The moon should go dark. There should be no moon, so you should almost get a full moon, like a new moon, dark. But this doesn't happen. The moon still becomes illuminated, but in a different way. And the way it becomes illuminated is, without getting super technical about it, is that sunlight is refracted through the Earth's atmosphere, which is pretty dense in places. The blue light, which is a different wavelength to things of the red spectrum, this is getting technical, but this is why it happens, that the blue light gets scattered in the atmosphere and sort of, if you like, dissipates. But the red light out of, if you like, the sun's light spectrum passes through the Earth's atmosphere and is bent round the Earth, because obviously the atmosphere is curved, going round the Earth, and then goes to the opposite side of the Earth from where the sun is, where the moon is, and that piece of red light is shone onto the moon and is then reflected back to us. So with an eclipse full moon, you get Earth shine coming back to us from the moon. So it's a filtered part of sunlight passing through the Earth's atmosphere, bent around the Earth, shining onto the moon, and reflected back to us, which is why it goes blood red. Now, of course, if you're an ancient person,
and some of us are
anyway, of course, this could be very worrying.
Yeah.
Because an eclipse of the moon is an eclipse of, apart from one's feelings and emotions, moons are often very much associated with countries, mother countries, do with motherhood, all those sort of things. So they could be, this could be portending some terrible thing happening. But actually the moon is also to do with the body. So there's a whole lot of things that go with the moon. If you cut out the moon when it should be full, what terrible thing might happen? However, this isn't necessarily a given. Some terrible thing doesn't have to be happening. But actually what it is something to do with the moon, which is our protector, our stabilizer, without which we'd be wobbling about all over the place, mm-hmm. is actually giving us a different message to the message that might normally happen in a full moon, which is reflecting sunlight. It's reflecting a piece of sunlight that's come from Mother Earth and is showing it back to us. So.
That is so cool. It's amazing.
There's a different connection happening here.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole different message happening. And obviously it's very beautiful to see because you can get, depending on the nature of the atmosphere of the Earth at that particular time, because the atmosphere is full of different particles of dust or this or that, therefore the colors can be different. It can be very pink, it can be very deep red, and that's also it's a very beautiful sight to behold, but the message is different, and the message therefore tends to be simplistically something closer to home. There's something about the moon here and its relationship to Earth and us on Earth that is saying to us, I may have been tucked behind you. I may not be able to do what I normally do and reflect back sunlight, which is light and life. Mm. You know, we need the sun, but I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm still doing my job. I'm still reflecting back to you something of yourself, something of yourselves. And the red could be taken, yes, as a warning, but it also could be taken as being something much more, let's say, warm, personal, heartfelt. Mm-hmm. It's that, you know, the glow of redness.
Mm-hmm.
So, if with an eclipsed full moon, despite the beauty of seeing it, if this then aspects something in your chart, a planet, a placement, an angle, where it is in terms of houses, what sign it is, becomes a much more personalized message. Mm-hmm. This isn't like, oh, everybody's got the same stuff and it's something out there from the sun. This is very personal. This is very close to home. It's very much to do with us and the moon. So people should look and see whereabouts in their chart this may be aspecting everything, because the actual center of the eclipse is taking place at 15 degrees Aries, 7 minutes. We can allow a little bit of orb on this.
Uh-huh.
I think we could allow, you know, at least a degree,
yes,
if not more, maybe up to two. And I certainly think we could be looking at specifically where house-wise this is, what Aries means in your chart. What is this in relationship to the opposite sign, Libra, which is where the sun will be?
Mm-hmm.
What actually would it be in terms of the other cardinal signs, Capricorn and Cancer, squares? You could even look at trines on this as being something that might affect you personally, if there's something in your chart that does this. Now, the other interesting thing about it is, for those of you who may be listening along the west coast of North America,
mm-hmm.
is this going to be visible? The whole of it.
So we're going to see it from Vancouver?
You're going to see it from Vancouver if you get up early in the morning and you just about catch it, because it's going to be taking place roughly the center of it at about 5 o'clock in the morning, although it's now changed to 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what happened there. We just suddenly had a switch, which actually seems more reasonable to me. Around 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, the thing is, the difference between lunar eclipses and solar eclipses as well is solar eclipses, certainly total ones, they only last for, say, between 2 and 4 minutes. You've really got to be in the absolute right spot for a very brief moment in time. But a total lunar eclipse will cover a much wider area and will take place over a much longer, slower period, a number of hours, and even in the what's called the umbra or the umbra, which is the dark shadow of the moon. It's going to be a few hours in there. So it's not like, oh my God, you know, if I'm not there right on that moment, I'm going to miss it. We've got plenty of time to see this. But you have to sort of have a little bit of patience, because this kind of message is not like a quick, you know, like a total eclipse of the sun. It's not a quick thing. It's a slow thing. And you need to sort of just get yourself through it, because the message will come through over a longer period. The first thing that happens with these total lunar eclipses is the moon goes sort of a bit discolored, a bit washed out, a bit grey, and you think, oh my God, something's gone wrong, it must be clouds. But actually what it is it's passing through the outer shadow of the Earth, which is called the penumbra. So you get this good greying type effect. It's not really not exciting. And you think, oh, I've missed the whole thing. But then you have to hang about and wait to the central piece, which was about, what did we say, Alison?
6:23.
6:23. Yeah, but it's not like you got to be there at that moment. That's just the center of it. Actually, this total piece in the middle part of it, when it's in the umbral shadow, will be there for over 3 hours. And that's the central point. So you could start a couple of hours earlier than that time, and it's wise to do it. And I'll tell you why. It's because when it's at the center of this eclipse, it's getting fairly close to the horizon, because the moon is setting and the sun is rising. And we're almost getting into what we call twilight, and there are different stages of twilight, which we don't need to worry about now, which is this gradual lightening of the sky over a period of an hour or so. Mm. But once it's gone past a certain point, the sky's too bright, so you can't see it. So you have to catch this in the couple of hours before sunrise. So you have to look at the opposite horizon, and this moon will get red low down. Actually,
you're going to see it from here.
Yeah.
Just something else, something else just popped into my head while I'm saying that. You're almost going to get a double whammy, because when the sun and moon particularly are low to the horizons, particularly moons, when they're rising or setting generally, because you're viewing them through so much atmosphere, it gives this sort of magnifying effect. So if you've ever seen a moon rise, the actual point at which it starts rising, when moons rise, they tend to be much reddy-oranger, they tend to be bigger, and as they rise up into the sky, they go more yellow, whitey, and smaller. This moon is setting, and therefore, it's almost going to start appearing to look bigger as the eclipse is taking place. And you get not only this earthshine thing happening, as it's coming out of night, is you actually get the effect of the atmospherics. So you're going to get an even richer red if you get a good clear sky, a much richer colour, and the moon will almost appear to grow in size as she's setting. So it could be really magnificent.
Yeah.
And you can see that from here, because Alwyn's facing west.
That would be tremendous. That would be like, oh my God, what's happening?
We'll take a photo.
Yeah, definitely.
You know how like people talk about these days about so-called supermoons?
Yes.
Whatever that's supposed to be, which is basically moons looking bigger and things like that. This is going to be magnificent, this one. This ain't just your average, you know, lunar eclipse.
Yeah.
Over here, this is going to be like, wow.
That's right.
So you then have to start thinking about, I go backward, where that, apart from the experience of it, which will in fact of itself, if you're viewing it, give you a flavour of the message, because somehow you'll sense it. You may have to go away and interpret it, but you'll sense it. Because the thing about lunar stuff, you know, this is not just sort of an intellectual experience. It's lunar, it's body, it's your emotions, you know, you'll feel it. So you just have to allow, what am I being told? But if you're doing your chart, you got to check your chart. Because this particular point in your chart has already been activated. You know, whether it's a planet, whether it's in a house, the, you know, area, your whatever area of life that might be. Because that area of life has already been subject to recent changes and recent interesting experiences, I'm putting it sort of slightly euphemistically. Why? Because Uranus has already been there. And actually Uranus is really close, within a degree and a bit, to this total lunar eclipse.
Yes.
But you must see Uranus. because he's the unseen, but he'll be sitting behind it. So it's almost like you've got this blood-red moon with almost sort of this electricity or this sort of energetic field or, what you know, these waves that, you know, related to Uranus coming through it. So it's like super energized. So you have to think backwards over the last year in your chart and say, well, Uranus has been to this position. So we have this little thing that I call, it's a lunar echo. And the moon does this very frequently at certain points. Actually, normally, if you check some of the lunation cycles on new and full moons, you'll see that it somehow is within a degree or so, if you look forward a couple of months or go back a few months, of where a planet has stationed. It's around the station points. And Uranus, I believe,
in Aries.
Stationed in Aries at 16 degrees.
Wow, that's so close.
Back in July. So it's already past this point. Mm-hmm. It went stationary retrograde. It's passed over this particular point of this lunar eclipse in September. You know, right towards the end of September. Actually, a good day to look at would be the 22nd and 23rd of September. Going further back in time, earlier in the year, where it first passed this point, on the 22nd, 23rd of May, as in its first pass, and then this second pass retrograde at 22nd, 23rd of September, this blood red moon with Uranus sitting behind it is providing a very clear, enlarged message. Take note of whatever Uranus has been trying to shake up, change, move forward. Where and what are we trying to make a new start with? What may we have been somewhat resisting? Because it's different, it's a little bit unsettling, and the moon is coming along here. And even though she's blood red and looking a bit worrying, actually she's saying, it's okay, I'm here, you'll be fine, have some courage. Go with it, change what needs changing, because things need shaking up. Now the real question that derives out of this is, well okay, planets go forwards, they come retrograde, and then they go direct again. And normally, you're going to get three passes. So of course, Pluto, it does his own little thing, and sometimes we get five. And I certainly remember having Pluto squaring my, talking about moons, Pluto squaring my moon five times.
Wow.
As if like three wasn't enough, thank you so very much.
Just for good measure.
So you're going to have to look at, I'm just going to say when the third pass is, just to round it off, you have to wait till next year. The 13th, 14th of March, 2015.
Okay.
Just make a little note in your diary.
Make a note now.
See if this message you've got. And actually, then you're going to see, did you or didn't you accept these changes? Move forward. Have you been hesitating? Because it's in Aries.
So are you saying then first to start going with some kind of interpretation on an individual basis for this particular eclipse, that you would go with the house and then some aspects?
Well, I think, first of all, I would see if there's any aspect to a planet in your chart, because you'll experience it through some other component part.
Do you have any aspects to the 15 Aries?
I have no planets there, but I do have...
Do you have anything around 13, 14, 15, 16 of Libra, Cancer, Capricorn, or Leo?
Well, I've got the 6th house cusp right at 15 Aries, and I've got... Libra, let's see. Venus at 11 degrees Libra.
A little bit wide, but she'll pick it up a little bit.
Yeah.
She'll pick up a little something. But Venus has been getting so many other transits.
Yeah,
I mean, particularly with like the Pluto, you know, I mean, how are you going to pick out this one?
Yeah.
And that's still around that degree, isn't it? So that may be a small confusion on this. I think you need it within a couple of degrees orb either side, and you're going to need it conjunct opposite the squares and maybe the trines. I think sextile will be pushing it a little bit to understand, appreciate what it is, because it's is going to be in another element, you're not going to experience it so well. But, you know, it's like, take the cross from it, take the triangle from it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And actually, if you lay the triangle of a trine, a grand trine, what it, effectively, across the square that you get with the four other points, you get a very interesting little star pattern on your chart. So you could almost draw the little star pattern, because it's the triangle and the square.
Mm.
Makes a really interesting little star on the chart. And you could see if any of those points, or what those points touch on, any of those points would be interesting, because this moon with this Uranus is making aspects to them. So it's quite broad.
I actually, I'm going to get two trines coming from that into my chart. So,
excellent.
Yeah. Is it excellent?
Well, they're fire, so you're going to need to move. I'm sorry, I do not mean move house necessarily. Unless, of course, it's going to be doing that sort of thing. But it's like, move yourself.
Mm.
Actually, it could be very encouraging.
Yeah.
It could be very stimulating.
Yes.
And at the same time, maybe where there has been a little bit of anxiety, because
yes.
the Uranus has been sort of jangling the nerves a bit on stuff, I think the moon may also provide some cautionary stuff, but I think it's there to do what moon does, to embrace, to nurture, to hold you. It kind of like a little safety net, you know?
Yeah.
Like, don't worry too much, I'm here for you. You can go with this a little bit, you know? Because fire will require some kind of action. Got to move. It's life. Fire. Got to live.
Interesting. So people who are living on other areas of the planet where the eclipse appears during midnight period will not have that thicker atmosphere, although they will still perceive
they'll get
it.
The blood red.
And what did you call it? Earth lingo or something?
Pardon me? Earth shine.
Earth shine, that's
but
it.
But actually most of that's happening across the ocean.
Oh, okay.
Before it hits the coast.
Okay.
So that's happening over, I think, is that happening over the Pacific?
The Pacific, yes.
So the west coast here is a prime. People will get parts of it because it's passing across the North American continent, if I can express it that way, bearing in mind I'm not from here. So you'll see, they'll get parts of it. They just won't get the whole full experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll get parts of it. The difficulty with it is that probably getting too close to the horizon for it to be seen clearly enough. You know, it's going to slide away a bit, but still very effective, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for once, we're right in the right position.
Oh, absolutely. all the way down this western coast.
Yes.
From, you know, right through Canada, right down the American coastline, you know, west coast, we'll get this experience.
Excellent.
Very good. Then
and you know what? And it's a coastline, and what I automatically think of is, if you can view this across water, the ocean or a patch of water, it will be stunning.
Yeah.
The moon viewed across water always seems to be making that personal message of the light pointing to you.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, imagine that red, imagine the ocean, a red light, like a red light beam coming from this blood red moon. There's a red light coming all the way across the ocean, right to you. Whoa.
So we should be able to get some really good photos from this area, you know?
I think maybe, if the sky's clear enough.
Yeah.
That's you never know with cloud cover and stuff, but yeah. It should be fantastic. They'll all be appearing on YouTube and
Facebook
and everywhere. They'll all be whacking them up within the hour, won't they?
Yes. As we speak, though, it'll be, you know...
But did you want to talk about Owens? Did you ask her?
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Or is that inappropriate?
Is there anything? Is there anything to say about it being just on the cusp of the sixth house?
We said it was on the cusp of the sixth house, so we thought ritual health and
work. Yeah, but it's not career work, but it's work.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Well,
what not?
A spot of vacuuming.
Little
you mean?
Crafts and things.
Well, it's whatever is occupying your daily routine.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, let's assume you don't have any servants.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think we can assume?
Just all the Virgo planets.
Just officially.
Yeah.
Oh, well, oh, you mean you are?
I am my own servant, yeah.
But you would have already had...
the Uranus
dingle-dangling
on it.
I mean, and hang about around that, even when it went stationary.
Loitering with intent.
Pardon me?
Loitering with intent.
Absolutely, because whatever the changes are...
Yes.
There may have been some initiation, some exploration, but it hasn't actually really been put into play. So it could be a little bit of a nervy time at the minute. We could be going through a little nervy time this year. It could be exciting because there's potentials here. Uranus does tend to jangle the nerves a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think the moon will be quite encouraging. I think it may help to just calm it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a course of action is possibly already committed to, but it may not have been acknowledged consciously that we really have committed ourselves to it. It's kind of, do I really have to? Oh no. But it's kind of hanging about saying, yes, yeah, sorry, you do.
Yes. Yeah. It's actually interesting, isn't it, that this is actually happening. That eclipse could have been really anywhere.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's why I call them a lunar echo, because the moon has a habit of coming along and personalizing a particular area or point in the chart and making it individual. And when it's related to planets that are way out there, the big stuff, maybe the unseen stuff, like Uranus, for example, you know, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, you don't see them. Mm-hmm. We assume they're there. We've seen pictures. Everyone tells us they are.
Yes.
So we can't see them in the sky, almost to get that little bit of reassurance, but we're still having the impact of them.
Yeah.
We're still having the effect of them. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they're pretty major, the effect of them. I think the moon just says, the moon is visible, and it makes it personal. It makes it more reassuring and intimate, and says, no, it's fine. You're okay.
Yeah.
I'm here.
I got to tell you, I've had this Uranus trining particularly into my chart in a most, I don't want to say irritating, but things have gone unexpectedly slightly this year to what my big plan was, and this is going to hopefully sort it out.
Uranus will not necessarily do what we're expecting.
Yes.
Of course it won't. It's Uranus, for goodness sake.
But
what it does is it shakes it up. Yeah. So it loosens it all up a bit. It's a bit nervy, as I say, but it's saying... Excuse me, did you consider these possibilities? This may not have been the part.
It wasn't the plan.
This may be a bit off the wall kind of thing. Like, where the hell did that come from?
Yes.
But have you probably considered it? Because it's asking for the change.
I don't want to change.
No, well, that's why Uranus has to do it. But maybe it says, hang on. What if we do this differently? You know, if you think about this, consider it. Don't throw it away. And because it's of consequence, I'm going to go away and disappear. Do you know what? I'm going to turn back. You know, I'm going to come backwards retrograde. And I'm going to shake you up all again. Because you need to get this. You need to consider it. And then just to be sure, I'm going to turn back round again. And I'm going to go forward. And on the third time, you need to get this.
Mm.
Because life is not about necessarily always the plan we've already made. It's not just Saturn time. That's, you know, it may be a bit ploddy, it may not be terribly exciting, it may be more reassuring, you know, more familiar, but it ain't necessarily the real deal. Think about doing it differently.
Mm. So what...
what do you do? Mm. What do you feel about eclipses then, Owen?
Well, I guess it depends on where they are in my chart. I don't really have that visceral, as you were talking about, the emotion and the body and all that. I don't have... We've talked about this, Allison and I, about how we don't feel it, sort of. We don't have that. But we understand that some people do. We don't have that sort of...
That tuning with the moon.
Yeah. But we know that...
The pair of us, we seem to feel that, I think, that we...
It's there. We're like...
Lunar astrology and eclipses and moons are not quite... Their messages are not quite getting through to us, it seems.
Well, I kind of go with what you're saying.
Mm.
And I don't think you have to necessarily be conscious of a deeply emotional physical experience with these things. However, you know, there's something going on regardless of whether you're tuned to it.
Oh, definitely.
Because I think we all tune slightly differently.
Definitely.
And as soon as we say about, well, you know, the moon is moving the fluids in our body, and it's, you know, to do with our emotions, and it's to do with nurturing, mm-hmm. and it's to do motherhood, and it's to do with our mother, and it's to do with our mother country. Some people just go, yeah, right, what, you know, and switch off.
Yes.
But then, sometimes, I think, and excuse me, and you don't have to say anything about it, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that it is directly connected to you ladies, but the thing that goes through my head is, if you're not connecting to this in any way, shape, or form, then one might have to be looking a little bit more closely at your own moon. Why is your moon not going with the cycle of the moon? It's the same moon. The moon didn't change. You know, it didn't go away and another one come back, kind of thing. It wasn't replaced from the moment you were born to that moon that's in the sky. It's carried on going. It's the same moon.
Yeah.
And the moon was in a certain sign. It was in a certain position in the sky or not visible. It had a certain relationship to the sun at the time of your birth, i.e. phase. You have that moon. If there is no lunar connection that you're conscious of, then you're going to have to go backwards. You don't have to do anything. Excuse me, it's just language. And say, why is that moon in that chart not as connected to lunar things as it might otherwise be? Again, I say, we do not have to be having a deeply emotional experience with the moon. It's just something it touches on. But there's two things. One, despite the fact that we want to make it a personal principle and almost internalize it, actually, the real deal with the moon is it's an external principle affecting us or otherwise internally.
Yeah. And reflecting the sun at us.
Yes.
Yeah.
The moon is not being embodied, but it doesn't need to be because the way it moves fluid, the way it moves the tides,
mm-hmm.
the way it moves you with your cycle is not from within, it's outside. The moon is a barren body.
Mm.
You know, it's dry. It's got no water, except for tiny little bits of water ice in crevices out of sunlight. It has no atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
maybe very rich in minerals, but it has no life.
Yeah.
It may be beautiful, and it may be doing a fabulous job for planet Earth in stabilizing it, and it may be doing a great job of reflecting sunlight because we can't look directly at the sun,
mm-hmm.
but actually, it doesn't have water.
Yeah.
It doesn't have atmosphere. It doesn't have stuff happening on it.
Yeah.
It's barren, but it's moving ours from outside.
Mm.
So, it does not have to be an internally embodied experience. It's coming from outside. That's one thing. The other thing is, hang about, you have to go back and do the chart and say, well, excuse me, what was the experience of your early childhood and your parenting, whatever kind it was, and then what was the role in that of your mother or the mothering that you did or did not have, whether by your own natural mother or some other substitute mother, you know, whether it was a grandparent, you know, an auntie, a carer, wherever it was. What was the experience that your moon embodied that causes you either to feel more comfortable and connected to lunar cycles or simply to be experiencing them as a natural phenomenon to do with your own body and being aware of it but not having the connection to it? In other words, Where in all of this was the disconnect? Or what you believe to be a disconnect?
Mm-hmm.
Or what you feel, or rather what you don't feel, that says, well, I'm not connected to this? Those would be my questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not necessarily asking them of you, but I would say this of some others.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Where's the disconnect in this, going backwards in time?
Well, I do have an answer, only because it's interesting. if I were listening, I would be curious if I were out there in podcast listener land. And I happen to have a very interesting and appropriate answer, and that's that the moon makes no aspects to anything in my chart. It makes an incredibly wide trine to Mars, which is, you know, almost 8 degrees. It's not even a trine. And it's in Virgo. So it's, what is that, debilitated? It's something not
No, it's just
happy.
Peregrine.
No,
okay, yeah, but it's not the best placement, sign-wise.
Yeah, but a peregrine planet, what does that then become? You know?
Some sort of ass backwards focal point, right? Is that?
Well, it becomes a little bit of a maverick, doesn't
right,
it?
Yeah. Ass backwards
maverick. It becomes a little bit of a maverick.
Hmm.
And, you know, so it, like, overplays its hand because it doesn't have the connection. And a moon will always want a connection because that's the nature of it. It's not really supposed to be doing it on its own. It, so, in a sense, the moon has become disconnected without actually wanting to be disconnected.
Mm.
So it's almost like, I don't know, does that mean you were born in a void of course moon that actually didn't aspect in, you know? Is that what's ever happened?
It was a new moon. It was, but it was not quite, it was like 8 degrees away from my sun.
So was it before or after?
After.
So it's in the first phase of a new moon.
Yeah.
But it's still a dark moon, because that moon won't be visible anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 degrees is still okay. I would say it's a conjunction. You're born on a new moon. And actually, you're born in the best piece of the new moon, really, because you weren't at the end of the old cycle. You're the beginning of the new one. And that moon has the potential to sow whatever seeds it chooses.
Mm.
Or not.
Yeah.
But it's a dark moon. So, you know, to me, simplistically, I'd say, well, there is the initial father-mother principles at the moment of birth, apparently conjoined, apparently making a new start, making a new life. Now, the new life may have been you, but you were made some 9 months before.
Mm.
What happened then? Because the mother principle is dark. Now, that doesn't mean dark and, you know...
Shady.
Yeah.
No.
Dark and satanic. It means the sun's got the light and the moon's conjoined with the sun. So, you know, I'd be wanting to know about, you know, what's the relationship or what was the relationship between your father and mother? And because you're born on a new moon, which would be the interesting dynamic, is where's that moon? And then I'd want to know, well, what are you always making new starts with? Because you're an initiator. But the moon, and in a sense, you're female, and in just, you know, this is all very simplistic off the top of my head. You're female. The male has the male principle is, which has the spark, is the sun. So are we in situations where you're taking on that independent role that might otherwise be considered to be that of a masculine principle, but not necessarily a male, although it could be, and being the initiator? What do you keep on initiating? Because you start things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You like starting new things.
I do.
But with the self.
Yeah.
The sense of selfhood, not necessarily responding to or engaging in female principles in the so doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, no, I'm not doing those. Now, it's crass and it's not what I mean, but it's almost like you accept that male principle of the divine spark, of the initiator, of the giver of life, but you don't accept the female principle. Now, this is not a matter of male and female. This is not a society thing, although it could have the crossover,
right.
You know? It's just, it's kind of, that's what you feel to be your path, is to do one, and the other one is like, is dark, and you put to one side.
Oh, okay. Now it all makes sense, actually.
But then I could be asking you, what's your position on motherhood?
Not for me.
Thank you. Then it kind of answers the question.
Yeah.
The female principle, that moon has been put to one side.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, and therefore, what happened to your mother?
Oh, my mother's fantastic. She and I are, like, best friends.
And what about your father?
He's wonderful as well. I didn't grow up with him. I visited once or twice a year, and we became really good friends as adults, once I was an adult.
So did your mother both mother and father you?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
That's the two together.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like, therefore, your mother didn't fulfill what would be deemed to be, You know, I'm not talking about conventions here. Yeah. I'm just talking about the way the principles
archetypes,
work.
Yeah.
She did the archetypes. Okay, you can do it that way. Mm-hmm. She did actually, therefore, in the so doing, adopt the principle of the, you know, what one would perceive as being motherhood.
Right.
Actually, the way she did it was almost by adopting the role of being the father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other words, she combined the two, but the overriding thing that one saw
was the masculine principles.
Yeah, it's just real simple off the top of your head, stuff. We could, you know, we could talk about it in more detail.
Yeah, and by the time I was 6 years old, I was saying, I don't want children. my mother tells me that that I decided that very early, and I never changed my mind. So that's interesting.
Well, then it's kind of interesting, and I hear what you're saying, and that's how it could take place. Because, as I say, if you don't, those are the questions I would ask about what's in the chart and the whys and wherefores.
Yeah.
We then go back to now time and this, you know, lunation.
Mm.
Okay, there's been loads of blood moons whilst you've been living. There's going to be loads more. They're not commonplace, but they're far more likely. Well, I've got to be careful what I say. They might not be. Well, certainly than total solar eclipses, which is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
And they're this long thing, but the simple fact that this one is happening with this Uranus and is right on the cusp of a house, whether it does or doesn't aspect anything else, tends to suggest that regardless of what your feelings may or may not be, we're talking lunar stuff, there is something about your life and the way you're conducting it. Not whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, but what your daily life consists of that is going to be changing, and actually, regardless of whether you personally connect or not, you will be held. There's a safety net there.
Interesting.
So there is an external mothering, nurturing principle always there for you, regardless of whether you choose or not to acknowledge or embody it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It is always there.
Yeah.
How nice.
I know. This has been Andrew Wharton, astrologer from the UK, visiting us. And unfortunately, he has a prior engagement. We are just about to make him late. So we are going to continue farewell. But thank you so much, Andrew, for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for joining us.
I've had a great time. Thank you
Wonderful.
So much.
Very good.
Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toews. I'm Arwen O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thank you for joining us.
We'll see you next time.